We're doing the Kiddush Hanukkah and Kol Chayim. We're up to the laws of the Haftarah in Maftir. Our custom is that on the Holy Sabbath, we call up seven people to read the parasha. Once we've finished our minimum of seven, so our sages instituted that on different days, there are different minimum readings. So, let's see, do we know the order? You guys know where it is? It's a Mishnah in Megillah. So our Mishnah is in the fourth chapter of Megillah, the second Mishnah. And the Mishnah says like this. On Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed, we call up four people. Not less, not more. And no maftir. So any time you have a musaf and it's not a Yom Tov, that's our rule, you call up four people. On Yom Tov, so you call up five. On Yom Kippur, six. On Shabbos, seven. Now, you could add. On Shabbos, we could add more people, etc. It's not a work day. If necessary, we add.
It's not 7 plus 1?
So we do 7 plus 1, but the plus 1 is an extra. Now, where's this relevant? Whenever we finish the minimum that our sages instituted, that's where we say Kaddish. So that's why on Shabbos you finish the parsha with the seven, and then you say Kaddish, and then you do Maftir. On Chol HaMoed, where the Maftir is the fourth Aliyah, our sages instituted to have four Aliyahs, so you do three in the reading of the day, and the fourth one is the reading of the Musaf, so you do Kaddish after the fourth one, because he's the one that's already an extra. Okay, so back to our halacha here. So we call up seven people for the whole parsha, and then we say Kaddish, because I did the parsha, and I did the seven people who needed the aliyah as our sages instituted. And then I call up a maftir, who's really an extra. Really, I'm calling him up to read from the haftarah, to read from the prophets. But in order to give him a little bit more honor, so he doesn't read from prophets without reading from Torah, I repeat a part of the Torah on his behalf. I read in a few psukim from the end of the parasha, I give him an aliyah in Torah, and then I let him read maftir. On Yom Tov, we do the same thing. Remember, Yom Tov, if it's a Yom Tov, so we're supposed to have five people called up. So we call up five people for the reading of Yom Tov, and then we call up a sixth for the maftir. That's why on Yom Tov also, we would say Kaddish before the Maftir. What about on a weekday that's a fast day? So you're going to call up three people. What about on Chol HaMoed? You're not adding. So then the third person is himself the Maftir. Remember, on a fast day you call up three people. So the third person who gets the third Aliyah, he also does the Maftir. On a fast day, we say the Kaddish after Maftir. On a fast day, we would say the Kaddish after reading the Haftarah, after we put back the Sefer Torah. The same is true on Tisha B'Av and on Mincha of Yom Kippur. And why do we say Kaddish between the Shvi and the Maftir on the Shabbos? That's to discern that the Maftir is superfluous, really, that we finished our obligation. We already did our seven. The only reason is out of respect for the Torah, that the Maftir should also get a piece of the reading of the Torah. That's why we let him read from the Torah. But technically, we finished our obligation. That's why we do the Kaddish there. Okay, so again, technically, the Kaddish should be just before the Shmona Esrei, right? Technically, the Kaddish should be just before Musaf. But they stuck in a Kaddish between the 7th Aliyah and the Maftir to indicate that the 7 were done and the Maftir is an extra. So let's say on Monday and Thursday, so there we do the Kaddish. We're not going to have another Shmona Esrei, so there we do the Kaddish right after the reading of the 3. Because there we finished the 3. Let's say, where would this be relevant? On a mincha. Meaning where this comes up, is by Mincha, where you're going to do the Torah reading before the reading of Mincha. So then, there's no reason, you can do the Kaddish directly before Mincha, the Shmoneh Esrei of Mincha. There's no reason to do the Kaddish earlier, or the Mincha of a fast day. You could do the Kaddish right by the Shmoneh Esrei. There's no reason to do it earlier. So there, we do not say Kaddish right after the Torah reading. We wait to say it just before the Shmoneh Esrei.
Just to indicate that we did our duty.
And now we're going into Shmoneh Esrei. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
What's the rule about the maftir? How many psukim does it have to be? Or they decide?
We'll get there. We'll get there. Usually we say minimum of 21, unless the topic finishes in less than 21. We have once a year where that happens. Ordinarily we say the maftir corresponds to the Torah reading. So there were seven aliyos. So you should read three verses corresponding to each of the seven. 7 times 3 is 21. So the maftir should have a minimum of 21 verses, unless the topic concludes in under 21 verses. You finish the topic in less. So then we allow that. That's very rare that happens.
After really that long,
21 verses? Count. So now you could count. You have a new challenge during maftir.
Is it meant to be as a punchline?
Wait, let's see. Let's hear him out. You guys want to know more about the maftir? We're not yet up to that. He's going to talk about that later down. We'll take a minute to talk about maftir. What is maftir? So once upon a time, there was a wicked, wicked king. And he forbade us from reading the Torah. Now you'll ask me, when did this king live? And I'll tell you, I don't know. Because there are different opinions among our sages. Some date this period back to the time of the first temple. So that king would have been a Jewish king. And he made a decree that we may not read from the Torah. Now we had our fair share of wicked Jewish kings. People sometimes complain about today's politicians. Boy, they don't know Jewish history. Today's politicians are good compared to Jewish history. Even in the time of the first temple, you had kings who were banning the writing of Sifrei Torah, closing up every Jewish day school. Today they're saying, oh, they're so wicked, they take away funding. Back then they locked the doors. They prohibited learning Torah. I mean, they made an institution you could not read the Torah in shul. So the rabbis at that time, and according to some opinions, this was the period of the first temples, these were Jewish kings, yeah. So the rabbis of the time said, people are going to forget Torah reading completely, so if we can't read Torah, we will read from the prophets. They made an institution to read from the prophets. Then the decree was annulled. And the rabbi said, okay, once we instituted it, we're not going to let it go. So the idea of the maftir is it's supposed to zoom in on a point of the parasha. So that when you read the maftir, you'll be reminded of some point that the parasha made. So that's why the maftir always has some kind of theme that connects to the parasha. Rav Mendel Hirsch, wrote a work. Not Rav Samsel for Hirsch, Rav Mendel Hirsch, wrote a work showing the connection between the parasha and the haftarah. There were a few such works. So the rabbi said, we'll leave the institution. We go back to reading Torah and we'll still have the maftir. The word maftir really means to take leave of haftarah. You're taking leave, so to speak, of the Torah reading with a little bit of prophets. Okay, yes, David.
Yeah, I'm just curious about why the kings would be banning the Torah and they'd be okay with prophets, these wicked kings. It just makes no sense to me. It seems like they'd want to get rid of all such things that reference Hashem, even though they might see this as their history.
I'm not sure. I mean, it's a good point. But now that you raise the question, I have to wonder. According to the opinion that says it was from the kings of the first temple, so the latter prophets were written at the end of the first temple. So then that would mean that the original institution was probably the earlier prophets. The earlier prophets are more like a storybook. You read the book of Samuel, Joshua, Judges, Kings. Doesn't seem like you're reading anything that's so godly oriented. It takes a little bit of insight to understand how it's connected. But we generally assume it happened later, this decree not to learn from the Torah. But you have a very good point. I think that it's pretty much accepted, and we've seen this in our history, that the prophets have much less of an impact on people than reading the Torah. At the end of the day, the Torah impacts people. When people read Torah, we see this in the time of Yoshio, we see this in the time of Ezra. You open a book and it says, God said, and here's how you're supposed to behave. It can have a greater impact than reading the prophets. We haven't seen that the prophets have such a great impact, even though they have an eternal message. For whatever reason, how many people do tshuva from reading the book of Isaiah? We have a hard time understanding what he wants from us. Yeah. Yet people read the Torah and suddenly they say, hey, I got to eat kosher. I got to put on tefillin. But I'm guessing that's the truth. I don't know. Meaning, I think your question is good and my answer is an attempt at some semblance of an answer.
I think it makes sense, actually. I mean, obviously it would be the end of the first temple period. I mean, that just makes perfect sense. That's why they would be wiped out, merit to be wiped out and being lost, so to speak. Now the next question, I think, to answer that whole thing is just, all right, yeah, good point. There's not a whole lot about, you know, laws in Hashem, but you do see a lot of the laws being violated, though, and the penalties for such in the earlier prophets. That being said, it seems that they'd have some Torah knowledge to want to get rid of it, kind of in the same way that Amalek wanted to destroy morality.
For sure. It says that some of the kings would take every Torah scroll they could get their hands on and erase God's name every place it appeared and put in a pagan god's name instead. So throughout the Torah, they would be writing in different pagan god's names. And that was one of their ways of fighting the Torah. Sure, it says that throughout the period of the first temple, throughout most of the period of the first temple, we have the northern tribes being led to paganism by their kings, who felt it a threat if they would be observant, if they would see the temple as the center of worship. And then you also have some Judean kings who went astray. Yeah?
Do they too lose their Jewish status, these kings? It would seem that they, even though born Jewish...
So that's a totally different question, which deserves an answer. I want you to think about it and see if you could see the answer yourself.
It seems to me like, yes. Yeah.